You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline. The game starts here.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded, a mini version of the top 25, under 25. We're going to do a top 10 Habs prospect halfway through the season, more or less. And who could be a better guest than Hadi Kalakesh, a co-writer, a co-worker, and now running more or less Gobbler Prospect. Hadi, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of Habs prospects having great seasons. Excited to talk about this.
Yeah, there really is, and we should mention the rules really. And what we have said was we have a cutoff line of 10 NHL games before you are ineligible for the road for this exercise is the word I'm looking for. We're picking top 10 players, 10 games or less in the NHL. And we have a few HMs, honorable mentions. And Hadi, that was pretty, you know, in the end, we almost ended up with 15 guys each.
Exactly, yeah. I've got my five HMs here. And I mean, a couple of Euros in there, but, you know, I've been watching a lot of the North American side. So been focusing on guys like Luke Tuck, Cédric Guendon, those kind of guys who, you know, I really, really like. But there's just there's a depth of quality in the HAP system that we haven't seen in a while. So those guys end up in the HMs.
There is, as you mentioned, a depth of quality, but there's not really that edge, the quality edge that you want to have.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the edge and quality that you have is already in the NHL. Juraj Slafkovský, Kaden Gooley, Jaden Struble, those guys for me have kind of cemented themselves as NHLers. And I'm especially impressed with the strides that Jaden Struble has taken this year. I mean, yeah. I expected him to have that poise, that composure under pressure, and that breakout game translate really, really well to the NHL. But to what extent? I mean, I wasn't expecting this. He basically stole Justin Barron's job by being able to do the things that Justin Barron isn't really good at doing, which is...
And what happens to Barron now?
Yeah, I mean, Barron... I've never really been the biggest fan of his breakout game, of his defensive game. He's always been a really flashy skater, with really good activation. You know, he's a player who will constantly join the rush and create offense. But, you know, when you're that bad with your back to the play, you can't really keep up with the NHL pace. And, like, that's the one thing that Jaden Struble is excellent at, is he's so good at feeling pressure on his back and making plays under pressure. It's such a stark contrast between Struble and Barron. I would have loved to see them on the same pair. I don't think they ever played on the same pair. But yeah, it's really interesting that, you know, a player with such an alluring skating stride, with such great offensive tools, a booming shot, managed to struggle so much at the NHL level. You know, that conversation also applies to another big, smooth skating right-handed defenseman in the Habs system that we'll talk about in a second. But Struble's just been amazing. And the things that he does well are just exactly what you need from an NHL defenseman, on top of being just a monster physically, a great skater, a decent stick handler and shooter. It's just what really makes his game tick is the puck handling under pressure. His ability to handle that pressure and play off of it, it's been amazing.
There is a reason why he's not on those lists that we have in front of us right now as well, yeah. Because he is solidifying himself as an NHLer, and that's why we left him out. Honorable mentions. Let's start with the North Americans.
Absolutely. So there's one at the AHL. Riley Kidney. He's been pretty decent this year. The progression to the pro game was, you know, kind of a bit more of a growing pain with Kidney. At the start of the year, it was very clear that he was still playing that junior style, still playing at the perimeter. Even though the inside game that he added in his final year in the queue really helped him kind of improve those elements, right? So Kidney in his draft year was just the most peripheral player I'd ever seen. He was constantly playing around the perimeter. By this last year in the queue, he had become such an inside driven player. And as the season progressed in the AHL, he went from being really peripheral by force, kind of being forced to the perimeter, to finding ways to kind of bypass his lack of size and work towards the inside and play well between checks. So that progression is what puts him just outside of the top 10s for me. And yeah, I mean, he's having a decent rookie season. It's not too bad. Apart from the AHL, though, I've got two North American prospects playing in the junior systems. Cédric Guendon has been great this year for Owen Sound. He's at about a point per game. You'd like to see a player put up more than a point per game. He's at 51 points in 53 games so far. And I think the main thing is with Guendon, he's a really, really cerebral player, but doesn't really have as many physical tools. Not a high-end skater, not a high-end puck battler, doesn't have the leverage in board battles to get off the boards with the puck. He's mainly a player who will create offense in small increments. So in half-second, one-second puck touches is how he creates his offense. Either, you know, a little inside out move down low for a shot, or, you know, a give and go pass at the front of the net, that kind of stuff. But there's a lack of linearness in this game, if that's even a word. So yeah, and that's the full opposite of Luke Tuck, who's also another North American player on this list. I mean, Luke Tuck is just, he's an extremely linear player. I've seen a bit more progression in his ability to kind of anticipate play and see these lateral passes. Like, there were a couple passes this year that he's made, I'm like, oh, wait, that isn't his skill set, where he collects a rim pass and, you know, takes one quick look and the pass is zipped on his teammate's stick in the slot, that kind of thing. But overall, what you're getting in Tuck is a dump and chase, dig the puck out of boards type of player who loves to just barrel down the ice off the rush and shoot it as well. So just a really kind of straight line player, whereas Guendon's a bit more of that cerebral kind of lateral player, right? So two different players who both end up in my honorable mentions for different reasons.
Yeah, and I actually have no, because I obviously don't watch as much junior hockey as you do. Kidney sort of, I didn't even remember he was in AHL at this time.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't have him ranked. On the other hand, I have Volochin ranked in my honorable mentions. The season he's having in MHL is crazy good.
It's and yeah.
it's a junior league with high scoring, and he has a 1.6 goal against average. He's 9.4 save percentage. You know, 16 wins, 3 losses, 4 losses in overtime. It's crazy good for a junior goalie, and who doesn't play for SKA or for CSKA, or maybe even Lokomotiv. Those are very, very good numbers, and the fact that you have his rights, as we're going to talk about someone else later on, for eternity more or less, means that you don't have to rush him either, and he can have the long Russian school, and we know what kind of Russian goalies has come out from in the last decade. Very, very strong foundation. That is an honorable mention that I'm happy to have on my list.
For sure. Yeah, I really haven't watched the MHL all that much. I've mainly been focusing on the North American side, but you know, when I do watch the MHL, it's more for players that are in those big programs. So I've watched like Matvei Shurevin, you know, Igor Chernyshov, Yegor Surin, those kinds of players in the MHL for like a game or two, but Volokhin hasn't stood out when they played against him, and I haven't really honed in on his game, so I'll take your word for it. But yeah, just looking at the numbers, it's absurd.
In a way, if he doesn't stand out as a goalie, you're doing a pretty awesome job.
Yeah, absolutely, as long as you don't look foolish, you're good on between the pipes. Absolutely. We do have a couple Euros in common though, right?
Yeah, I think we have for as a honorable mention, and the question is if you have the same honorable mention. I know we have one, and let's talk about him, because he's really come into the radar the last couple of months since he was moved from you know, a team that is doing very well in the SHL and where he performed very well for the role he was given, into a small town team playing their first season in hockey, Allsvenskan, Filip Eriksson.
Yeah.
And you know, I was sitting thinking with Anton, and I was sitting talking to some of the Växjö reporters, that should he have been in the Swedish under 20 team? And in a way, he shouldn't. In a way, there was not one forward spot that I could take away and say that would have been Eriksson's. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he has fallen off a little bit from the radar of the Canadians. Also, a sixth-round pick, you don't focus as much on him. But he's putting up over a point per game in Sweden's second league, which is a pro league.
Yeah, and absolutely.
As a junior, which is, I mean, like he's almost a year later than Meshar, who's getting a lot of credit for his work in juniors and a strong world junior championships that we're going to talk about later. Hashtag spoiler alert. But but Eriksson is doing it against pros, against seasoned men, against veterans. And absolutely, that is impressive.
For sure. What's really impressive with Eriksson is just there is a significant gap between the SHL and the Allsvenskan. But I mean, Växjö is a good program. They've got a bunch of really good players. I've watched a bunch of their under 20 team this year. There are a couple of really highly touted NHL draft defensemen on that end. There's a massive gap there, though, and I think that Eriksson's game this year has just clearly been a pro game. Like he's a solid defensive player. He anticipates play really well. He gets into lanes early, and a lot of his points will come off of really good defensive plays where he just rushes the puck up the ice and does a good job. Right?
He's done a few of those Dutch Gretzky things as well, where he just skates out of the zone a little bit too early.
Yeah,
but also his strength is really the passing game, and he's the hub of the power play in hockey Allsvenskan, which gives him a freebie on some points, definitely. But it's usually his pass that sets up the scoring.
Yeah, my only concern is, I don't know what division Nybro plays in the Allsvenskan, but like I've heard that there are significant gaps also within divisions in the Allsvenskan, right? So not all divisions are created equal. That's one thing I'd keep a look on. I've mainly caught his SHL tape, but haven't watched an Allsvenskan game yet. But, 17 points in 15 games against men, you know, at his age is good regardless, right?
Yeah. And the fact that he's doing it in a mid-tier team that is first having their first year in hockey Allsvenskan after coming up from Division 1, is also a strength. He's not doing it on one of the top teams. On the other hand, the bonus that he plays for a mid-tier team and who's falling in the ranking as well, but is that he's getting those first line minutes instead. He's getting 20 minutes a night, and he's getting the power play, he's getting the box play, so he's learning at a very high level.
Absolutely, and that's what you need. I think we also have Vincent Rohrer in common here in our honorable mentions, right? Yeah.
Someone also that has fallen through the cracks for many, playing in, and I can't state this enough, the team with the biggest budget in Europe by far. We're not even joking here, by far. I think they have a squad budget that is double the top team in Sweden.
Yeah.
And the top team in Sweden doesn't have the biggest budget in Sweden. That's the other thing. But just as an example, the one with the biggest player budget in Sweden is one of the bottom teams right now. Sirius Lions, they have twice that easily.
Yeah.
And to be able to play on the third, fourth line, getting those extra minutes on power play two, fantastic.
For sure. I've caught a decent amount of Rohrer because I've been scouting Leon Mugli recently. And is it Mugli or Ustinkov? I forget which one plays
Ustinkov.
Ustinkov, yeah.
Yeah.
I've caught him a decent amount, and you know, I don't see much progression, I would say, in his game. He's more or less the same player he was last year, but just has, you know, the challenge for him this year was taking his junior toolkit and making it a pro toolkit. I think he's learning to do that gradually, learning to kind of figure out what works and what doesn't against men. And the Swiss National League this year is, I mean, there's been a huge step up in quality as well, because we're talking about a level where, like, a lot of the players who would be playing in Russia are migrating to Zurich, to the Swiss National League instead, because, like I said, the budget is massive. They're able to afford paying their players good money. And it's, you know, I believe he's been playing in a bottom six role, if I remember correctly. And
yeah,
mainly, I mean, this is a type, I think this is the type of role we can expect from Moore at the NHL level if he develops a way that he can. I don't think you'll ever get a top six player out of him, but what you're going to get is a ton of energy, a ton of aggression, a ton of violence off the rush, and
a work ethic that is extreme.
Yeah, absolutely.
We usually talk about work ethic as something that is expected, but in his case, it's extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. Not the toolsiest player, but just the mindset with him, the effort level with him is just off the charts, and that's going to be his ticket to the NHL. I think there's no tool in his toolkit that I can point to and go like, okay, yeah, this is the thing that makes you stand out. It's not like, you know, no. I don't know, Adam Enstrom skating or Luke Tuck shot or, you know, that kind of stuff. He doesn't have an individual tool where I'm like, okay, this might work out for you. But just the overall game, the effort level, the intensity. I mean, Brendan Gallagher had a great career. I'm not saying Vincent Zora is Brendan Gallagher, but if Brendan Gallagher wasn't as good in terms of effort level and work rate as he was, he would have never made the NHL, I don't think. So, you know, some players, it's their effort level that defines them, and it's their effort level that makes them such effective players. So,
yeah, you know, and you need some of those players in the team as well. Players that just goes in, does the dirty work, and let the top players rest.
Absolutely. And I think Rory can be exactly that for the Canadians. I think that that's a comfortable role for him.
Indeed. Do you have anyone left in your honorable mentions?
No, we've covered them all. Do you?
No.
Perfect. Let's get on with the top 10 then.
Yeah. And we'll be right back after these messages. And on the top 10, at my number 10, I have a certain Finnish guy, Oliver Kapanen, Mr. Ketchup Effect, I've started to call him, because he scores spottiness. He scores in spots and nothing happens. And then suddenly everything comes together at one end. Not the tooliest player, but defensively strong.
Yep.
And he has a shot that he's not using enough, I think, but also the fact that he's I think he needs to work with his mindset, because when something is off, it's completely off in offensive zone, whereas when he starts to get that confidence back, he can score on anything, more or less.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what's really interesting with Kapanen is a lot of his goals, even though he has a good shot, will come off of really good positioning.
Yeah.
He's a player who finds soft ice really well, who works between checks really well.
Stands in front of the net and can lift pucks up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In tight, he's really, really good. The thing that's really interesting is, you know, usually those players are a lot more consistent. Because they don't have to rely on a tool in order to score. They're relying really on their brain to create the offense. So when your brain's clicking inconsistently, you know, I usually think of exhaustion, fatigue, or just, you know, instability in terms of how you approach the game by game, your preparation, that kind of stuff. Because, like, you know, if you have let's say Cole Caulfield, for example, if you have a really, really good shot and that's what really drives your offense, you're gonna be really spotty, and it's something that your team's gonna have to live with. Even though Caulfield thinks his way to goals really, really well, you know, he mainly falls back on that in stride wrist or on that one timer from the half wall, on those kinds of shots to create offense. Whereas with Kapanen, it's all mind when it comes to his goal scoring ability. I think his playmaking ability has improved over the past kind of year or two. I saw him as a like really simplistic playmaking wise, to a point where it was kind of hindering his game. And I've seen a bit more of that kind of give and go game, those area passes, those slip passes that I really like to see from playmakers. So, like, I think he can still fall back on his playmaking game when the puck just isn't going in. But mainly, this is a player who, you know, does the small details, does the dirty work. And I'm really confused as to why he's so spotty production wise. But the end result is 24 points in 41 Liga games so far, which isn't bad.
No, definitely not. It's Probably not what I would have wished for. I would have wished for more. But you could also argue that, born 3 weeks later, he would be in the under in another draft. So he's also one of the youngest players. I'm 99% sure. It's an educated guess. I haven't heard anything from any scouts or from Kapanen himself or from Kalpa that he will sign with Montreal this summer and take the step over to AHL and learn the trade there. And that's where this will be a deciding time for his career. Where will he end up? In what role will he end up?
For sure. Yeah, I still think at the end of the day, like, especially if this continues, I'd expect kind of a bottom six projection out of Kapanen, like a really good bottom six forward. And the thing is with the Habs is that they have like a billion of these, so it's just getting a bit tight in the bottom six. I mean, if you
They
factor
could
in.
leave Kapanen for another year before they sign him as well. We need to remember that. So,
Yeah.
in order to facilitate, if you can't trade away some or you need them someone else in AHL, you can leave Kapanen in Europe for another year.
Oh, for sure.
Was Kapanen number 10 on your list as well?
He was, yeah.
So, and this is probably where we're going to end up having a little bit of a discussion. I have Bogdan Konyushkov at number 9. Who do you have?
Oh, so do I.
Oh,
I like
is
the
that
player.
because we wrote that fantastic article a month ago, 2 months ago?
Yeah, I've watched a ton of him. Torpedo's one of the European teams I've watched the most. They've got like two really, really good draft eligibles in Anton Salayev and Nikita Artamonov. And the thing with Konyushkov is he's not necessarily a good skater, but he thinks the game at a high level. And I think the Habs have done a really good job in recent years of focusing on players who think at an advanced level and focus on bringing their tools up. And in Adam Nicholas, all is possible when it comes to skating and offensive tools. So I think that at the end of the day, this might be very low in terms of the overall projection for Konyushkov. Because you look at the points, you look at the role he's playing. Not many 20-year-olds are playing top pair minutes in the KHL. Like
No, definitely. But
none.
also with the Ukraine war, KHL is different. You have to promote this, especially the teams that are not SKA and CSKA in a way. They need to promote this role. We saw that he was rested for a couple of games now because of that usage. And with the big teams, they can rest the whole season and go into the playoffs and still win the league in the end,
Oh, yeah.
because that is how difficult it is for other teams to win than the big ones. So I think that I agree with you on the skating issue. And when you look at it, and I spoke with some scouts in one of my recent times in an arena watching an SHL game, and they were saying like, his size is also a little bit problematic because he doesn't skate as well. His size becomes a factor into that. He can't compensate his skating with being big. And the one thing they said was that he is progressing. He's going forward. He's learning the trade. He got the right coach. That's what you need to focus on. And as we mentioned, you keep the rights for Konyushkov for as long as you want. And that is, he's recently signed a 3-year contract. He's gonna be gone for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. That gives you time to figure that out. My
The
concern is
question
how.
is then if Nicholas can work with him.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's my concern. It's like, how much is he staying in touch with the Habs brass over in the KHL while playing top pair minutes in the in that league? Like it's I think that's going to be the kind of game breaker. As long as there's a regular contact, as long as there's regular video coaching being done, as long as he gets some visits where some on ice training happens in the meantime, like I think there's a decent path. I just don't think that the KHL is necessarily equipped to develop him. Because the K in the KHL, mainly it's a kind of sink or swim league, where it's like if you have the physical tools, you're good. If you have the skating tools, you're good. And then you learn to think the game through reps, right? But I don't know how well equipped he is in the KHL in terms of kind of developing his physical tools, because his mental game is really, really solid. Like he anticipates threats really well. And that's the thing when you're small and not the best skater, is you're forced to think your way out of trouble. And he's become really good at anticipating threats early, getting back early, identifying situations in which he can jump into the rush, create an offensive chance, and still have time to get back if something goes wrong. And he's been working on his shot. I think his shot has improved a decent amount. His playmaking touch is really, really solid. But yeah, overall, this is a player who has definite improvements in his kind of baseline foundational physical tools, but the brain is really, really intelligent. And in that sense, he kind of reminds me of the mold of Lane Hutson, even though they're kind of different players. I think the development objectives are the same, where it's like the physical tools aren't there, but the mental game is so solid that you have to take a shot on this player. And I think it was a really intelligent pickup in the fourth round, but there are still so many question marks that I've come in at ninth overall for the moment.
And sometimes when I watch the KHL, I end up with more question marks in regards to the league quality, in regards to the traditional team's quality, in regards
Absolutely.
to Konyushkov's quality and his teammates' quality. And sometimes you feel like you end up with more question marks after watching the league than you had before you started watching that game. It's really confusing time right now. We know they're going to bring in more players, more international players, but it will be third level American, North Americans. And I'm not sure that is good either for Konyushkov in a way, because I want him to play against the best Russia has.
Absolutely.
And then you have the same thing that you have, they bringing up the juniors in order to compensate for something. It's because some Europeans, as well, most Europeans have left, and you're not getting that top line players anymore. And the top players in KHL are getting old.
I mean,
So you have a
these are
discrepancy
factors,
there
yeah.
as well, yeah.
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. There's a bunch of factors there involved in the whole situation with the KHL, but you're definitely right. I think that the SHL has definitely leapfrogged the KHL in terms of quality. We can even maybe throw the Swiss National League in there, even though there's kind of a
I think the
there's
Swiss National League, the top end of Swiss National League is probably better than the SHL.
yeah, I was gonna say it's a very top heavy league in the Swiss
Yeah.
National League, but
And we'll come to
still.
that later as well. Hashtag spoiler
Absolutely.
alert. But then, I mean, Konyushkov is interesting in that regard, but he's also not very projectable, I think,
Yeah.
as of this moment. And definitely not where he is in 3 years when he can come over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or
That's
two
the
and a
thing
half.
is, yeah, that's the thing is that with Konyushkov, like the brain is so projectable, the processing is so projectable, the way he anticipates and thinks a game, reminds me at times of Jaden Struble in terms of his ability to like play off of pressure, and make quick reads in transition that advance a puck, right? But it's just the rest that's just a bit confusing at the
But
moment.
sometimes he reminds me of Justin Barron when he plays defensively.
Absolutely. It's hit or miss. It's really, really hit or miss.
That's what you want with a fourth round pick as well.
Yeah,
And
for
you
sure.
know, it's in some ways I wouldn't be against him being traded or bought out by SKA or CSKA to get that systematic play. You know, he's probably in the right squad with Fetisov as a coach, and he will give him the leeway and he will ask him to do absolutely everything.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, to get become a little bit more structured, be set in a defensive system that works,
Yeah,
think that would benefit him in some ways as well.
for sure. I think it would help to have him move to a big program so he can kind of see what it is to play in a kind of more structured system. But at the same time, I feel like the more reps Konyushkov gets in these situations, the more he's going to further polish his brain. Like it's always a big developmental question. It's like, do you spec everything in your strengths or do you try to round out your game?
You
Maybe making.
don't start this conversation because I'm going to end up talking about, you know, Brazil 82 in the World Cup,
Yeah. That's
but
a great comparison, actually. I love that.
and for those who doesn't know, Brazil 82 is probably the most talented team that ever put foot on a football field. The problem was that no one wanted to play defense and they all played to their strength. No one worked on, you know, any cohesion or defensive sets. I think Italy had two scoring chances in the quarterfinal, and they scored three goals. So there you
Wow,
have
okay.
it. I have another player at number 10, 9, 8, who probably should be higher on the list. I am in a setting of this list where I don't know where I go. I'll be honest with that. And for me, that is Jacob Fowler. Great season right now. You know, he did what he needed to do in the World Juniors. But I also think sometimes that goalies are voodoo. And then I also think, you know, and, you know, size doesn't matter. But you know, he's not that big yet.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have a Fowler very, very high. We'll get to him later on. I am increasingly sold on what he brings to the game. This is a fierce competitor.
So just leave that for when you have him and tell me who you have instead.
Oh, perfect. Okay, let's do that. You're going to be mad. I have Adam Engstrom at 8th overall. Yeah. And again, this is just because there's a large depth of quantity in the Habs system where there are a lot of players that I put in the same range. Like Engstrom could have easily been as high as 5th on my list. Like the next four guys are really, really close. But Engstrom for me is just, he's so intelligent. He's such a fluid skater and he's learned progressively how to manage the off puck game to, as his coach put it very early in his career, play poker, right? Mm. Like this is a player who learned to go all in when he needed to fold when he needed to just call the bet when he needed to, in terms of what he does on the ice. And I love all of that. I'm just not really particularly sold on his puck skills in isolation becoming something necessarily high end. I could see him become a really good number four or number five mm-hmm. defenseman. I think that's kind of the ceiling so far with Engstrom, unless something comes out of nowhere. But yeah, just
we'll talk about him a little bit more when I have him then. And it will be before the break anyway.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and then I have Sean Farrell at number 7.
Okay. Interesting. I almost snuck Sean Farrell into my honorable mentions, but I couldn't find a spot for him. The season's been different.
Up and down.
Yeah. It's been different than what I've expected from Farrell in Harvard. And I think the progression to the AHL has been difficult. But yeah, I actually don't have him ranked, but it was a difficult decision for me. It was just that, you know, there's a lot of players in terms of depth of quality in this roster. And like for me, Farrell has taken a considerable step down that kind of just made me not forget him, but just kind of see him as a bit less projectable so far. But like there's a lot of hockey left. You know, he still has some runway. But what really
also, also for me, it comes down to, you know, and I don't watch AHL enough because it's on the wrong side of the Atlantic. For me, it's the right side for all of you guys, listeners. But you know, for me, I see, you know, 17 points, 24 games. Laval is not, you know, it's a shooting gallery both ways sometimes. But also, you know, you're doing that in your first year with the AHL. You're doing something right.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If we credit Engstrom or Eriksson for his play in Hockey Allsvenskan, I need to credit Sean Farrell in the same way. For arguably playing in a better league.
Yeah, for sure. And the chemistry developed with Joshua Ho, I think, was key in that. I'm just, there's something about his game that's just, he keeps to the outside just so much. And he's really good from the outside. Like, he sees passes that no one else sees. I just don't see enough in the rest of his game to kind of project him as a bona fide NHLer. Mm-hmm. And with the depth of quality the Habs have in their bottom six, like for me, for Farrell, it's either he pops off and becomes a top six forward, or he's just not.
He's going to Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
Who do you have at number 7?
I have Logan Mailloux. I know the points. Yeah, I know the points are really, really impressive in the AHL, but the question marks that I had in this game, in his draft year, in his draft plus one, and his draft plus two, have just still been there. He's a player who reminds me a lot of Justin Barron in his approach to the game offensively and defensively. He's a player who struggles with his back to the play. He's a player who panics pretty quickly when he's pressured and tries to overdo it offensively as well. The puck skills and the tools are ridiculous. Like, he has probably the hardest shot outside of the NHL right now. He's really confident in his stick handling ability. I wouldn't call it the best, but he's confident in it enough that he's doing things that other defensemen can't, and he jumps into plays every chance he gets. Off the rush, if it's a one-on-one situation, you're not getting around him. Like, you're not getting past him. But as soon as you add another player in that equation, as soon as it becomes a 2v2 or a 3v2 or a 2v1 or any complex defensive scenario, he breaks down. And the other part of that is also, like, the retrieval play. Like, again, this is a player who reminds me a lot of Barron on retrievals. Just as soon as his back is turned, there's no game plan. Doesn't really scan as much, doesn't really predict what's going to happen and try to anticipate play and spin off checks and make a pass. Like those have been some major areas of concern since this draft year, and they've maybe marginally improved. This is why I'm like, I've liked him a bit more. Like in previous years, I've left him out of top 15s and top 20s, like entirely. But I can see that there's a definite path to the NHL for Mayu. I just don't think he's going to be the most effective NHL defenseman, which like puts him in this range for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I'll get to my ranking on Mayu in a bit. But, you know, that shot will carry him into the NHL. That's what I think.
For sure. 100%.
So because I don't think other teams will take him on right now, but you might showcase him. And in order to create that spot, someone else will take him on in order to at least make him into a power play specialist.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that that's kind of the pathway for him. But for me, the question is he going to be effective? Because like if you're having a really good game penalty wise, you're going to spend 10 minutes of the 60 like on the power play. Outside of that, what's your impact on the game? Like that's a big question with Mayu. I think that overall there's been too much investment in him to not give him a shot in the NHL.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he's effective or not. So I think that either by the end of this year or the beginning of the next year, Mayu is going to be in the NHL and probably is going to stay there full time. I've seen this story too many times, not just with Justin Barron. I mean, I'm talking about guys like Rasmus Ristolainen and Nikita Zadorov and those kinds of players that are overly confident in their offensive toolkit, but just really not, like, their confidence doesn't match their abilities.
But on the other hand, you have Erik Gustafsson, you know, he's made a career out of it.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, he ended up being like a seventh defenseman on the Habs, which like, you know, it's kind of the story there. It's like, can you be impactful enough on a game by game basis where you're solidifying yourself as a top four piece? I don't think Mayu's there yet. I think he's going to be given that opportunity, and regardless of the warts and the problems and the issues, he's going to keep getting sent out there because he's big, he's strong, he's fast, and he shoots hard. But I just have so many questions about the mental game with Mayu. He's just not there, and it hasn't progressed enough for me to put him any higher.
That's fair. And who do you have at number six?
Number six for me is Philip Meschar. I love this player, and I think you shouldn't really sleep on him. I still think that he has that second line upside. But it's been a bit on and off this year. I think he had a fantastic World Juniors, and yes, granted, he was one of the older players on that team. But still, what he was doing on that big ice with his speed, with his skill, with his intelligence was just absurd. For me, he was arguably Slovakia's best player. And, you know, with the depth of talent they had, like, that's saying something. But the players ahead of him are just, I feel, more translatable overall. I think that Meschar might have a difficult time, or might take a long time to become a full-time NHLer.
I'm going to talk about Meschar right now because he's coming on my list, but not at this spot. And I think what I saw from him in World Juniors, which is what I've saw him the most, was the fact that he, on the bigger ice, had the opportunity to circle back and end up as the central focal point, more or less, in a dice when the five side is up. Yeah. And he ended up a little bit too far away from the goal at times. And he got the puck and he moved towards the blue line rather than bring it into the to the home plate area. Yeah. And I think that is what stood out. And if I don't want him to do that in a way, because NHL doesn't have the bigger ice. So I wanted to see him play more an NHL-style hockey. The question is, did he adapt that fast back into Olympic-sized hockey? Or is it something he does to create that extra second for himself to think?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's the thing that stood out mainly with Meschar is he uses a lot of cutbacks and kind of reloads in order to create offense in the OHL as well. What I think, though, is that in the OHL, on that smaller ice, he's doing it in a way that translates on smaller ice. You know, for me, it's just, I feel like a lot of players think that advancing the puck is always the best thing. And sometimes the best thing you can do is cut back and reload and rethink the game. And he does that a lot, especially on the power play. You know, if he's trying to, you know, he's mainly used as the puck carrier on the power play in that kind of drop, that drop pass role. And if he doesn't like what he sees, he's comfortable just taking the puck back, reloading, having his teammates come back with him, and just attacking in a wave. And in the offensive zone as well, he does a bit of the same, where it's like, if he gets the puck at the half wall, he's not looking to play it down low every time. He's comfortable hanging on to the puck for 5-6 seconds and kind of figure out what his next play will be. He's a player who loves to let play develop. I think that that's a thing that you don't want to coach out of him. This is a thing that you want to kind of develop into an NHL tool, because the player with that poise and patience on the puck that Meshar has, with the skill set that he has, I think that's a great, great combination of tools that he can bring to the NHL. And if he can translate it, if he can make it more of an NHL level mindset, I think that that's a really great thing for his game.
I have Adam Engström at number 6, and I can see why he could have been lower. I could probably have him at a 5 as well, because, as we said, some of these players are interchangeable. The thing is, I've seen the progression in his defensive game, especially, and I think this is important, when he plays away or when Rögle plays away from home. Rögle's fans, they want to see attacking hockey. They want to see goals. They want the team to push. And with the situation that Rögle is in, it's not going that way. But away from home, they can play that kind of style where they need to lock down the ice, where they need to, you know, play structurally sound games. And that's where he really has improved. He has improved physicality. He has improved coming out of the corners with the puck. The one thing that I, in regards to Rögle's situation and the way Rögle plays anyway, is that it doesn't play as a team all the time. And I see a little bit of Cole Caulfield in Engström, where he tries to hero puck the a little bit too much at times, and it ends up going the opposite way. And that's something that, you know, definitely, I don't know if it has with his development or the team's negative development. We saw it the other way, just, you know, Thursday night. He should just have stopped the puck and he tried to kick it rather than go down and block it or go with the attacker. And obviously it was a certain Jonathan Lekkerimäki that got the puck and, you know, just roofed it. There are progression that I can see in translatable areas, physicality, corners, board play, etc., etc. He doesn't get the same offensive opportunities this year because Rögle is loaded with offensive-minded defensemen. He has been able to take, he has had to take the role away from the top pairing that was thought he would be with Kapla, but Kapla is, and Engström, that was, you know, something didn't mesh there. It was a brain fart waiting to happen every shift. So he has been moved down the order. He's been moved off the first power play unit. He's been moved off the second power play unit because Rögle bought a Swedish player from a certain team in Switzerland named Clauten. But it's I see a progression, even if his points isn't projecting very well right now, or if he's Rögle isn't projecting as well either right now.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm interested to see how he develops, because this is another player who's really confident in his tools, and especially at home, you can see it a lot. Like, he'll just hero puck up the ice and do whatever he wants. But I think in the defensive game's come a long way in terms of his processing. I don't think his tools are still there. The stick work needs some work. The physical game is never really going to be a strength of Engström's, but it's come a decent way. But yeah, I fully understand having him higher. Like I said, the 8-5 range, any order you can put him in, I'm fine with it.
And let's go for a break and be sure to lower your volume a little bit, because I'm sure the PR firm has raised the volumes on the commercial. At number 4, at number 5, I have Philip Meshar. We've already spoken about Meshar. Who do you have about number 5?
I have Joshua Hua. And, you know, Meshar is really good. I just think that Joshua Hua has a bit more of that translatability to his game. Hua is just so projectable in the middle six. This is a player who just is so good off the puck. And this is a symptom of having been a poor skater for so long. He's had to develop the off-puck movement and the off-puck positioning to hit the right pockets at the right times and kind of, you know, it seems like the puck follows Hua at times. Like, when he's on his game, it seems like the puck just pops up on his stick, but it's really solid positioning and anticipation. On top of that, Hua has a bona fide NHL shot. He can absolutely rifle that puck. And for me, the biggest progression in his game over the past 3 years, and this is the first player that I've really scouted from draft minus one to NHL debut, like the biggest progression since the start has been his playmaking game. He has become a really good connector of plays. And when you're you know, average size with bad skating, you have to develop that. The give and go game is the only way you can get out of trouble when you're not a good skater and you're not the biggest guy. So like those progressions in his game have become ridiculously good. He's gone decent defensively as well. So like the fact that he's in the NHL right now, just shows you how much he's come in his progression. Cause this is a player who everyone had pretty much given up on in his draft year. And since then he's just there's been this linear progression with him year after year after year. He adds tool after tool after tool. It's been so impressive to keep up with. And yeah, he barely makes a cut because if he plays tonight against Washington, he's going to be playing in his 10th NHL game. So yeah, it just barely misses a cut for us, the cutoff for us. So yeah, really glad that he was able to make this list because it gives me an opportunity to talk about Joshua Roy, who I'm a big fan of.
Well, not as big fan as a certain Matt Drake.
I was going to say, yeah, he's...
Which is also why I have Rushua higher in the list, because I'm scared of Matt, obviously. I think I have Logan Mailloux on my next spot, and we already spoken about Logan Mailloux. So at number four for me, I have Owen Beck.
Great, that's where I have him.
And I mean, like, we talk projectability here, and you know, he projects all the way through to at least a third line center.
Yeah, that's really the baseline at this point, and I think he can step into that role right away. He's just so defensively sound. This is the most defensively intelligent player in the Habs system, and I'm including David Reinbacher in there. Like, he understands the defensive game better than anyone. Does he have the range and the tools of other defensive forwards? Maybe not. Like Nate Danielson, for example, in Detroit. Like, there's a reason that guy was picked in the top 10. It's because on top of being smart defensively, he's got the range, he's got the tools, he's got the size. Beck isn't the biggest guy, but he consistently thinks himself out of problems. He consistently outthinks his opponents, and just, he's relentless. Like, I've seen him in a random prospect scrimmage game that doesn't count for anything, like work his butt off on the back check to lift a stick and get the puck. You know, he's a player who, no matter what the situation is, will always give it his all, and doesn't do it mindlessly. Like, I've seen players just run around the ice like headless chickens, just chasing back checks, you know, without much thought. Owen Beck has layered thinking kind of blended into everything he does. On top of that, he's become a true NHL level shooter. Like, his wrister is a 20 goal wrister. Like, it's a really, really good wrister. His playmaking game's always been good, but it's even come a step up. His skating's improved. His physical game's improved. So like, he's uplifted his whole skill set while remaining probably the best OHL defensive forward. Like, he's that good. And playing in Saginaw with the likes of Zane Parekh and Rodwin Dionicio now on defense, and some of the forwards that they've added over the trade deadline, like, he's really, really well surrounded right now, and he's still on the top power play, just rifling shots from the half wall. Like, that's... He's so good. And I think that he's one of the players who I think has the highest floor in the Habs system, but I also wouldn't put it past him to become a second-line center either. Like, he's got enough tools in his toolkit to potentially get that done. Although the Habs have, like, Suzuki, Kirby Dog, Alex Newhook, I think that...
But if you have Beck as a third-line center, you're pretty well set.
Absolutely. Like he would be one of the best third-line centers in the league.
Essentially, you have an 2A and 2A center playing two and three line.
Absolutely.
And I just realized, for the sake of everyone keeping track of this, that I've ranked 11 players.
Oh, have you?
shit happens, you know?
Yeah.
But at number three, I have Joshua Ra. But that's what I said. I was more scared of Matt than you were, obviously. but what do you have at number three?
I have Jacob Fowler at number three. We finally get to him. Yeah. Like I said, I am a massive fan of what he brings to the game. This is a highly competitive goaltender. Like, and not in the sense that he'll get frustrated if he lets in a goal. What's really interesting to me is, despite how competitive he is, you can score two against him in the first period. He's unfazed. He comes out in the second period and stops every shot. Like, the mental game with Jacob Fowler is ridiculous. It's probably the best of any goaltender I've scouted. Like, I'm
shout out to one of my students as well, because she's crazy in love with him.
But yeah, like, when I say the mental game's the best game I've ever scouted in any goaltender, I'm including Yaroslav Askarov, I'm including Jesper Wallstedt in there.
Well, like, Askarov, we know, didn't really have the strong mental game, right?
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, Jesper, like, Wallstedt, yeah.
No. I like Fowler. The thing is, goalies, man. Voodoo. And that's why, yeah, I have him so much lower than you have. I see what you're having. It's also the size issue. I'm really happy he has the opportunity to play in NCAA for a few years, and that the goalie situation is Montreal is so covered, so they don't have to force him up into a situation where he's not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. No, for
I
sure.
I think he is, along with Volochin, the future of Montreal goalies.
Yeah, for sure. What I say is, with Fowler, we're talking about a player who's playing at Boston College, and all due respect to Boston College, they don't have a Tom Villander. They don't have this kind of defensive rock, this kind of, you know, a lot of their defensemen that I really like. I mean, they have three defensemen I love. Eamon Powell, Lucas Gustafsson, and Aram Minichian. Those three, they're really, really good, but they're not defensive rocks. They're mainly kind of really good transition defensemen, really good breakout defensemen, but like, their defensive game isn't their highlight. So Fowler's having to do a lot of the stopping. And time again, I mean, you ask anyone at Boston College, they'll tell you he's the best goaltender they've ever played with. Like, beyond just the mental composure and the poise and the competitiveness, beyond the mental game, he's highly athletic. He's really good at making really difficult saves seem extremely easy. Like, he's constantly square to the puck. He anticipates play really well. His rebound control is really, really solid as well. So there's just so much meat around the bone that is really lovable with Jacob Fowler's game.
I spoke with Jacob just before the World Juniors, and I asked him about this transition into the Olympic sized rinks, and he was like, yeah, I watch video a little bit, and then we work out the new angles. Very, very confident, very poised, as you say, but also very intelligent. You know, you don't just work out the angles a little bit like that. It takes time. And you know, you see it with goalies crossing over. And I think goalies, for goalies, the rink size matters the most. Defenders, second most. And then, you know, you forwards, it's different, but it's not that different. Which is very, I mean, like, I'm super impressed with him. But it's just that me ranking goalies, I don't know what to do with them.
For sure. I've gotten a bit better at scouting goalies over the years, but it's still a big question mark. Like, I think my biggest success story so far, the one I'm the proudest of, is probably Jesper Wallstedt. But outside of that, it's slim pickings. Like, it's a difficult position to scout, but I've gotten a bit more comfortable with it over the years, for sure.
Yeah. Are we at number two now? Because since I have ranked 11 players, I'm just at a loss anymore.
For sure. I have David Reinbacher here at second.
So do I. And I think we're set in the start of the list. We're more or less set, and at the bottom of the list, we're sort of set. But yeah, David Reinbacher, number two. We've spoken about being in a crappy team, but he is that rock on that crappy team.
Yeah. Absolutely. He's, especially as of late, I think the start of the year he was just a part of the crap, I think you can say, but as the season's gone on, and he kind of settled into his role and became a bit more kind of comfortable, realizing that, like, he doesn't need to jump start every play and jump into every rush, like, you know, the moment he realized, like, hey, I'm just going to play my game, I think that's when he really stood out for me.
There are two things with this. First and foremost, we need to mention this crazy summer Reinbacher has had.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know,
that doesn't help him at the start of the season. Second, he was injured. Third, he played in a man-to-man system, which he wasn't used to. And I blame this on the GM, because the GM played a zone system.
Yeah.
When he was a coach to the season prior, and then he hires a coach that plays a man-to-man. He was lost. The injury didn't help. I think he came back too early. There's been conflicting sources about his injury. I have a source that tells me that he also broke or fractured his radius in the arm. And I think that
Wow.
hampered him a lot. They went out with a knee issue, but I think it was the radius that hurt him a lot because you've seen him make mistakes with the stick handling that he normally doesn't at this, like until Christmas, more or less.
Yeah.
I spoke to friend of the pod and friend of me and friend of you as well, Hadi, and friend to most of you, Thibaut Châtel. And you know, he mentioned this with a man to man because I wouldn't have picked it up early otherwise. But also he mentions that in every aspect of the game, David Reinbacher is playing better than he did last year.
For sure. There's definitely been a progression. I think that the handling skill still is a big weakness. For me, Reinbacher isn't really as good as other defensemen of this kind of caliber at catching pucks and making plays in motion, and also just kind of stick handling his way through the first wave of pressure. I think adding that to his game would unlock so much potential because this is a hyper mobile, really physical, really defensively sound defenseman who leads with a stick extremely well. Like it's for me, it was top of his class, like his stick work. It's insane. But really, the handling skill holds him back a lot because usually I see him kind of stop moving his feet in order to corral a puck before making a play. And in the NHL, you don't have time to do that. You
No,
can't do that.
then you
It
get
just,
hammered.
yeah, either you get hammered like Slafkovský did all of his draft year, but or you just kind of immediately get stick checked and pressured and kind of look up and panic. And I think that's the main thing is Reinbacher's panicking because he's still having to take a bit more time on each pass reception, on each, puck retrieval before kind of deciding on a play. But as soon as Reinbacher becomes comfortable under those circumstances, I think he's already intelligent enough to figure his way out of kind of the 3 second interval situations where he has three seconds to think the game. If he can shorten that down to half a second by just learning to corral pucks better, I think there's a
Or
side to his game
learning
that
to
he can.
play with better players.
Yeah, that could help. That could help as well,
You
for
know, where you
sure.
actually get the puck on your stick.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But even in the NHL, you get a lot of bad passes. And the good NHL players can catch bad passes in motion and keep going, So it's just, I think regardless, that's a thing he needs to add to his game. And I think the more bad passes he receives, the better he's going to get at it. Right. Like I think, working on that, outside of game scenarios, working on that in 1v1s, training with coaches, that kind of stuff can definitely help. But reps help a lot with that as well. And the more bad passes get sent his way, the more bad pass receptions he has to do and the better he gets at them. So yeah.
I think it's important because a lot of people look at point wise or you know everything else, but he is the only thing I can see right now that will keep Kloten in the top division next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a strong feat for a 19-year-old, right? Like that's not an easy thing.
And the unfortunate thing for Reinbacher is that they've gone back to play a man to man with the new coach. And let's address that issue a little bit as well. It was three coaches in 2 months, if you look at it that way. But it was also the fact that the GM needed to fire the coach, took charge, and while looking for a coach, he coached a team. And it was the same coach as he had the previous 2 years. So it's not three coaches in you know causing panic thing. It's kind of normal to do this in Europe. Maybe not where you fire a lot of because of relegation, you need to fire coaches earlier. I
Yeah,
think it's that.
absolutely.
And the market is not as saturated. And you can't bring, I mean, like, you can't bring in someone from Switzerland, probably, because they might not have a working permit in the rest of the EU or something like that. And so you need to, it takes time. It's not like bringing in, you know, you're in Massachusetts and you need to bring in someone from Minnesota. It just, you know, it's the same country, it's the same working permit. It's stuff like that that needs to work out in many ways, and you forget about it. But Reinbacher, you know, I see him as a staple at least on the second pairing for the rest of his life in NHL. Well, maybe not next year, but when he takes that NHL step, because next year I think he will have to start in the AHL.
Yeah, for sure. The way I see it is the high wherever Hudson plays, Reinbacher will play. I think those two are really complementary. So if Lane Hudson ends up being a bona fide top pair defenseman, Reinbacher will be his number two because I don't see anyone else that matches well with that skill set. If you have a Hudson Mailloux first pair, who's playing defense? If
That's a brain fart waiting to happen.
Exactly. On your second pair, I mean, you have Gouley there. You can maybe put Mayu in there, maybe put some other defensemen in there and kind of have a complementary set. But like Gouley and Reinbacher are two players who play kind of similarly or approach the game similarly. So I don't see much kind of...
And it's the same if you were to put Engström at, you know, the second pair and play with Reinbacher. They're very much...
Yeah.
It's kind of similar, at least.
Exactly. So, yeah, for me, like, Hudson and Reinbacher are really complementary players. So it really all depends on where Hudson ends up in the lineup. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just if Hudson hits his lower-end projection and becomes kind of a number four defenseman, I could see Reinbacher be the number three on that pairing, be the player who kind of allows Hudson to play with that more freedom.
And that's how you have to... We can talk about Hudson now because he is number one on both our lists.
Absolutely.
But that's how you maximize the impact of Hudson as well. You need to find that player that he will work with, and you need to sign them to similar contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Reinbacher is that guy for Hudson.
And you don't want to change that player every second year or something like that. That's what I was getting at.
For sure. Like, the main thing with me for Reinbacher is, you know, once the play's in the offensive zone, I felt like Reinbacher was pretty much kind of magnetically glued to the offensive blue line.
Yeah.
He wasn't a player who would go down to the dots or kind of explore offensively off the puck and find little lanes to hit the back post, that kind of thing. Playing with Ling Hudson forces you to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's going to help his game a ton. And we saw it in the training camp with Montreal when Hudson and Reinbacher were paired together. We saw Reinbacher activate a ton. We also saw Hudson activate a ton and Reinbacher hit him in stride. It forced Reinbacher into situations where he had to stick handle under pressure, where he had to collect pucks quickly and shoot them. So I think that Hudson is a match made in heaven for Reinbacher in terms of helping him develop. And the opposite is true as well. Because Hudson is, as much as I love him, he's not the player who's going to be your defensive stalwart. He's not the player who's going to be backstopping every play and staying back and being smart. He's a player you want just kind of going gung-ho in the offensive zone and just kind of circling the offensive zone, doing his thing. Playing with Reinbacher allows him to do that. I think that's a great pairing in the making. But yeah, to focus on Hudson, still the most intelligent and creative defenseman I've seen since at least Quinn Hughes. Like this... The level of intelligence and awareness that he shows in the offensive zone, the way he manipulates lanes, the way he stick handles out of trouble is ridiculous. And on top of that, a big progression in his game this year is his ability to make plays under physical pressure. So he can have a 6'3" winger on his back and he'll like shrug him off and make a pass. He's still able to do that now.
We also saw in World Juniors taking responsibility, being actually a defensive stalwart in that, you know, age group. Playing top minutes, playing hard minutes.
Yep.
And I was expecting a lot more point-wise from Hudson in the World Juniors. But in regards to his overall play, it was standout performance.
Yeah, and he still had the most assists out of any defenseman in the World Juniors. So, like, despite the fact that he was playing on the first penalty kill, he was playing a lot of defensive zone face-offs, he still managed to put up the most assists of any defenseman at that tournament. So it just gives you an idea of how effective Hudson can be in different roles. I just think that if you want to bring out the best out of Hudson, I don't think trying to make him a defensive ace is a good idea. Sometimes it's good to just kind of focus on your strengths. And I think Hudson has developed his defensive game enough that you can not have to worry as much, especially if he's paired with a really good defensive defenseman like Reinbacher. You don't have to be worried as much about Hudson, you know, kind of rovering and doing his thing. You want him to keep his identity is what I'm trying to say. So, like, for me...
You want to play him to his strength, obviously. Otherwise, you don't draft him.
Exactly, yeah. And Hudson's strengths are otherworldly. Like, there are... Like I said, I haven't seen a defenseman think and move the way he does since Quinn Hudson. Like, he's just an elite processor of the game. The creativity in his game is unmatched. Like, his brother's eligible in this draft. I've tried to like him, but he's giving me a hard time. I think, like, Lane Hudson, but, like, you turn the volume down by 50%. Like, he's kind of, like, half-muted. Yeah, that's kind of the approach I have to him. But, like, what Hudson has is just so unique. Just, you rarely see a player with this skill set, and... The Habs brass said it on draft day when they selected him. Every NHL team has a player in this mold. And Hudson could be a great, great offensive defenseman, top power play guy. So the upside's sky high for Hudson. I just think that, you know, wherever Reinbacher ends up, Hudson ends up, those two are going to be glued at the hip, and it's going to be beautiful to see.
And I think, you know, in the next draft, when you know what you have in Hudson, you go out and draft that player that you need to facilitate Hudson's game. It might not have been the best player available, but it's the best player for your team at that point. And you can't trade for a player like that because other teams won't give him up.
For sure. Obviously, I mean, this year there's a lot of options. I still think that the Habs could use a bona fide right-handed defenseman on their second pair because I'm still not sold on Mayu.
Yeah, but you take him as number five in this year's draft?
It depends who's available. If Caden Lindstrom, Berkeley Catton, Ivan Demidov are available, I'm running to the stage. But I love Zane Parekh, and I think he'd be a great add next to Caden Gooley, either on a first pair or second pair. And again, it depends on where Hudson and Reinbacher end up. If Hudson and Reinbacher is your second pair, a first pair of Gooley and Parekh is ridiculously impressive. And having that top four would be ridiculous and would set up the Canadiens for success for the next 15, 20 years. But I still think that they need a true elite offensive force, and they don't have that yet outside of Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský.
You heard it here. You listened to a halftime prospect report from Hadi Kalakesh on Dobber Prospects. And will you release your first rankings soon, Rahadi? I know there's something that we always look forward to.
For sure. So the Dobber Prospects rankings just came out on Friday. So you can check those out on the Dobber Prospects website. Just look up Dobber Prospects Top 64. It'll come up. We've ranked 64 prospects with like 16 honorable mentions. We did a good deep end job. So we're proud of that. And my rankings will be updated at the beginning of March, I would say, is where I'm comfortable updating them again.
Thank you so much for joining us, Hadi. And thank you to Mrs. Bexel up there because she has been listening to this pod from one point of view all the way through. And thank you guys for listening.
This episode was brought to you by Bet Online.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.